the ups, the downs, and all the in-between. What it takes to become next on scene. Are you next? Follow us at Next on Scene.
Becoming Next on Scene, Episode 2. So excited to be back here today, and I'm so excited to announce my guest in a little bit. Today, I really wanted to discuss the topics of all the legalities of when it comes to being a business owner. We won't go into really deep dive stuff, but I'm really excited to bring on my lawyer, who is also my husband, Andrew Delory. So if you don't know him, he is definitely a guy to know, and we will be sure to have a fun conversation with him in a little bit. But in the meantime, I wanted to come on and talk about the legalities of being a business owner, because when I launched my business 4 years ago, I actually was threatened by another company, and I, in the midst of even, you know, putting together a business, was kind of torn of what to even do with myself. I mean, luckily enough that I'm married to a lawyer, but I want to give advice to you guys today on things you should really think about when it comes to being a business owner and protecting all that you've created, everything that you're doing, just really everything to come full circle. So 4 years ago when I launched my business, I had my first fashion show, launched my first magazine, and my business was originally called Get Seen. And what happened was, is it kicked off, there was a huge response in my business, and all of a sudden another company had found out about me and wrote me an email and basically threatened me to change the name of my business, or they were going to file a lawsuit against me. So what do you do in those situations when you're just totally just being yourself and you think about, you know, like what your day-to-day is normally like, and then all of a sudden this comes up to you in an email and you're just like, oh my God, what do I do? Where do I even start? So I'm really excited to talk to Andrew more about that today, but also something to really acknowledge and take really into consideration is that if you do not have a lawyer as a business owner or haven't asked questions to create contracts and certain things that you need to protect yourself, you absolutely should consider doing that. It's really important. So before we have Andrew come on, I do want to talk about a really fun weekend that we had. So we last night we went to the Grand in the Seaport in Boston, and we went to a divorce party. Never been to one in my life. That was really, really interesting. If any of you guys follow me on my social media, you know, normally when they bring out the signs that says like happy birthday, so-and-so, it actually said happy divorce, or Andrew probably remembers the lingo. We'll talk about it with him when he's on. But it was so funny. It was awesome. I mean, honestly, I keep hearing more and more people doing that do get divorced, that they embrace it. And I think it's awesome if you can and you should. It's really a healthy thing to do because, you know, that's kind of a hard patch in your life. So I think if there are ways to embrace it and celebrate it, you totally should. So if you haven't been to a divorce party yet, probably something you probably want to put on your bucket list. It was really interesting. Also today, well, by the time you hear this, it will be Monday because I'm recording tonight, Sunday. So on Sunday, Andrew and I, and also some of my Next on Scene Mastermind ladies, we went to an awesome fundraiser event, Cure JM for Liam. It was in Burlington, Massachusetts, and it was basically a annual fundraiser they do once a year to help raise funds for our friend Luke Ryan's son, Liam. So if you haven't heard of Cure JM, JM stands for juvenile mitosis, and it's a life-threatening autoimmune disease in which the body immune system attacks its own cells and tissues, causing muscle weakness. The exact occurrence of JM is unknown. However, approximately 2 to 4 children in a million are diagnosed with it each year in the U.S., So because it's so rare, it's so important that when you hear about things that you go and do things you can to support them, because the more knowledge you share, the more powerful it is. So if you guys check out, go follow CureJM4, the number 4, Liam, L-I-A-M. Go and check it out and support our friends Luke and Liz Ryan. They are awesome. And also today they announced that he got, for Make-A-Wish Foundation, they're going to Disney World, which is pretty awesome. So Liam gets to meet all of his favorite Disney characters, as Mickey Mouse announced that today at his charity event, which was really, really nice. They also had some great raffle giveaways and some great silent auctions, and they do this every year. So be sure to follow Cure JM for Liam, and please spread the word. The more power, the better. So I'm so excited to have our guest on now, Andrew DeLory. Drum roll, please. Here you go.
All right. We officially have the amazing Andrew DeLory Esquire here at Becoming Next on Scene, second episode. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Jay-Z.
What's up?
Long time listener, first time caller.
Oh, wow. We've come a long way. I like that description. Andrew was parched before, so he had to drink some water and prep accordingly. Does he sound clear, everybody? I hope he does.
I hope so. I'm trying not to cough.
Yeah. If you do, it's fine. It makes it more organic, right?
Okay, so let's talk about you a little bit, Andrew. So how did you, just because we definitely have new audience members, so how did you become a lawyer?
Well, I went to law school, obviously.
Yeah, but that was never, like, your intention.
No,
you wanted to work at, like, Hill Holiday and do advertising.
I don't know. I grew up, my dad's a lawyer. So obviously, like, he worked for himself. He's worked for himself for his whole life. So obviously, like, I knew what he did, but I never thought it was for me. I went to college, went to University of Rhode Island. I got a communications degree, and I really wanted to go work like in media or in marketing or advertising. And what happened was when I graduated from college, it was 2009, and it was smack in the middle of the recession, and unemployment was like the highest it had been in 100 something years. And, you know, having a bachelor's degree really wasn't worth anything anymore. So I said, I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. I just spent all this money on a college degree. Like, what can I do? How can I get there in a hurry? So I said, I'm going to take a year off, and I'm either going to go to law school, or I'm going to go and get an MBA, get a business degree. I said, I need some additional education at this point, because the economy just wasn't supporting me with just a bachelor's degree. So I got my first job out of school, and I actually got a job as a paralegal in a law firm. And it was, I don't know, I just kind of loved it. Like, it was you're doing a lot of different things every day, and like dealing with clients. But we were like really doing like big like corporate stuff, so you weren't really talking to, you know, personal clients as much. It was just, everything was just kind of easy, and it was streamlined, and I enjoyed what I was doing, and I got pretty good at it. And then eventually I realized, like, my lawyer wasn't even reading my stuff anymore. He was literally just signing it and sending it in. And I'm like, you know what, I can go back to school for 3 years and do less work and make more money. I think this is the way for me.
Except you had to take the law school exam. What do they call it again? The bar.
The bar.
That's like the hardest thing ever, I feel like.
Yeah. It was that test is tough, but I passed, and yeah. You got to work hard. There's no substitute in that exam. There's just no substitute for studying. You can be as smart as you want. If you don't study, you don't have a chance.
So your Becoming Next on Scene moment was when you realized that the guy was signing your work, like signing your legal work, and you were like, wait a minute, I could totally do this on my own.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I just felt like I could do more. And I wanted, like, there was no way for me to really to grow where I was at the time. There was nowhere for me to go. Like, what was I going to do? Just become like the head paralegal and get like a $10 an hour raise? Like, it just wasn't what I was looking for at that point. And I was like, you know, I can't get my dream job. At least let me just, you know, buckle down. And my dad's a lawyer. He, you know, we had a nice life growing up. You know, he took care of us. Like, I know that I'll be able to provide for my family if I do this. Like, let me just go to law school. And then when I really wanted to be an entrepreneur. And then, you know, if I go out and I'm working for myself, doing whatever I want to do, at least I'll have like the wherewithal to know that I'm not getting screwed when I enter into deals. So that was always my plan. And what happened was, I started working at that law firm. I started law school. And after about, I don't know, 8 months, I'd been in that firm for about a year. And I had just finished my first semester of law school. I was going to school full time. And I was working full time, going to school at night, part time. And I was just exhausted. I was exhausted. But I got laid off at the end of the first semester. Like, very unexpectedly. Obviously, I went into my boss on Friday, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to go buy this cool, like, Jeep Wrangler, but it's really expensive and I can't afford it if I don't have this job. So I just want to make sure that I'm not going to lose my job. Like, I'm not at risk to lose my job because I can't afford my car payment otherwise. And he's like, yeah, no problem. No problem. That was Friday. I bought the car on Saturday. I got laid off on Monday.
Are you for real? Yeah. I didn't know that story. That's crazy.
Yeah, it was.
That's screwed up. What the hell?
It was brutal. It was brutal.
Why didn't he just tell you there? Because they can't leave.
Honestly, I have no idea. Like, I don't know. I guess I knew it was coming. Like, why would you go ask the guy? I just saw, like, the office, like, things were slowing down a little bit and people were leaving. And I'm like, all right. I'm like, maybe some people are about to get laid off. I'm like, I just got to make sure that I'm going to make the cut. I'm like, I now got to pay for law school and I bought this new car. Like, I got to make sure I have this job. And yeah, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. That was Friday. Bought it Saturday. Got laid off on Monday.
That's so screwed up.
And then I saw that guy in court a couple of years ago and I was like, should I chirp him? And I was like, nah, I'm just going to be nice.
You're better off. But now you are more entrepreneurial. It's just you and your dad. Yeah. So tell everybody about, like, what you guys do.
Yeah, so I'm a real estate attorney and a real estate broker. I work just my father and I, and we have two paralegals. We do, like, a lot of what they call conveyancing, which is just helping people, buyers and sellers. And we do bank work if you're taking mortgages out. So we represent all of those people. We represent a lot of real estate developers. Guys that are just constantly buying and selling and flipping or, you know, buying apartment buildings and holding on to them, long-term investments, doing that kind of stuff. And I, unfortunately, have to do a lot of evictions too, because, you know, just as a property owner, it's kind of the course of doing business. It's not very pleasant, but, you know, it's the reality. The laws in Massachusetts are very unfavorable to landlords, so it's very dangerous for them to be going into court on their own. It's very easy to get yourself in trouble in a hurry in housing court. And then on top of the real estate, I do a lot of, like, probate, meaning, like, wills, and do a lot of wills and trusts and estate planning. And then, like, once people have passed away, we do all, like, their estate administration. I don't really do as many divorces. I don't find them particularly pleasant, particularly when there's kids involved. They're very lucrative, but it just wasn't for me. I just basically don't do criminal and I don't do bankruptcy.
So you do everything else. So what is next for you?
Wow. Well, what I would love to do is I would love for my co-host tonight to finish the real estate exam, which she's halfway through.
Halfway.
And then I would really like to get my real estate avenue with the business, like, really, really rolling. I know with your help, we'll be able to rock it. They're just good for me. They directly complement each other. And then in the next year or so, I'm looking to get also a mortgage broker license. So what I do is, people come to me a lot of days and they're like, I want to buy my house and I don't know where to start. They're like, you need basically, for most people, You need a lawyer 100%. You're gonna need a mortgage. Not everybody has $600,000 or $700,000 in cash to just buy houses outright. And you should probably use a broker, particularly if you're a buyer. The seller is gonna pay your real estate broker for you. It's included as part of their commission. So why wouldn't you just have somebody who's a professional, who knows the area really well, and go in and negotiate for you on their behalf? So people literally come to me and they're like, I don't know what to do, and I have the ability to, I have the relationships and stuff to be able to facilitate all that stuff. I'd like to just be able to get the mortgage broker end of it, just so that, you know, I can, I'm placing stuff at banks anyway. I would like to get compensated for that. It would be a nice additional step. I mean, the good thing is, again, I'm just trying to find ways to bring better service to my clients without costing them any more money. And that's a way to do it. So I have that on the horizon. And then I also want to get my construction supervisor's license, which would allow me to pull building permits and stuff and do construction on my own. I have run into a lot of trouble with people, like at City Hall. They have permits that are outstanding or something, particularly when I'm dealing with people trying to sell a house. And they're like, my dad installed this bathroom 50 freaking years ago. and he never pulled a permit for it. And now I have to sit here and try to explain to the city, and it's like it's a mess. And you're like, the guy who did the work died, or he disappeared, or whatever the case may be. And, you know, like these people have no resource to be able to get these things completed. So I would like to just add the license so I can do my own development, but then also I can help people out in that situation too. I'm trying to create a more like concierge driven model of my business.
I love it. So awesome. All right. So now that we got to know Andrew a little bit, now we're going to get to the nitty gritty of the importance of business and legalities when it comes to your business with our expert today, attorney Andrew DeLore. So I don't know if many of you know this, maybe some of you do, but when I first launched my business 4 years ago, I originally called it Get Seen, and the magazine in print and my events were all called Get Seen. And at the time, I didn't realize the importance of legalities when it comes to being a business owner. So, you know, I came up with this idea. I was all excited. I decided I was going to launch this magazine. I had a big event. And of course, it went awesome because that's what should happen when you have, you know, you put all your passions into something you really want to do. And, you know, lo and behold, soon after my big launch party event, first ever one, I got an email, a threatening email, basically stating that I had to stop continuing the name I was using for my business, or they were going to file a lawsuit against me. So that was very scary and intimidating, especially being a brand new business owner and being innocent and just thinking the world is your oyster, but you also always have to protect yourself. So if you're not creating an LLC or a DBA or in being incorporated or getting trademarks, which we will talk all about today with Andrew, it is something you absolutely need to do, if not today, tomorrow. So ready to bring on Andrew to inform us on all this amazing information on what you can do to utilize into your business today. From a legal standpoint, if somebody gets an email from somebody threatening to sue them, what is the first thing they should do?
Okay, so I always want to say start by talking to an attorney. It may be that the letter is something you completely need to not be concerned about whatsoever, but it's better for you to find out. You don't ever want to have been in the wrong and then not done anything about it, and then you're behind the eight ball already. So
what are some things that like they should definitely be red flags that they have to like do something about?
Well, if you're getting a threatening letter, then chances are it's probably about something related to your brand. You know, it's a copyright claim, or someone says I have a patent or something like that. So there's two different things you can be concerned about. There's copyrights, which are your rights to like the podcast that you create. And then you have things that are patent that are specifically for, you know, inventions or whatever you're using, like your processes and your business set like that. So to think about it as a copyright first, you know, if you or a trademark or a copyright, if you get a letter from somebody that says, I'm McDonald's and I have a trademark on McDonald's, and you're opening Mr. McDonald's, and it's the same logo, same everything, you're just calling it Mr. McDonald's and trying to get away with it. You know, they're going to send you a letter that says, stop using our trademark.
That's called a cease and desist, right?
A cease and desist letter. That'll usually be the first step in the process. So you don't want to just ignore a cease and desist letter, because if you're in the wrong, you know, especially once you're on notice that they said stop using it, you know, they could use that against you at a later date. So you always want to just try to get to the answer. About whether it's something you need to be concerned about. You know, most likely an attorney may look at it and just say, you know, people just send threatening letters sometimes just because they want to flex their muscles. And sometimes, you know, you get a letter and we just kind of laugh at it. And we're like, okay, well, you're either going to file a lawsuit and do something about it, or you're just trying to make a bunch of noise. So at least if you know it's just a bunch of noise, at least you have the satisfaction of knowing that, and you can continue going on and doing what you're doing. Right. What you don't want to do is be in the wrong, been told that you're in the wrong, and then just ignore it and keep going on along the way. that's how you end up getting in trouble.
Interesting. Okay, so I want to go back to the get seen scenario, right? So I had this event. I just decided on a whim that I was going to create a magazine called Get Seen, and I didn't think about any of the legalities as much as somebody probably should now with all the experience that I've had. So when I got that first initial email, there was obviously, you know, a threat that came along with it was time to change your name or we were going to come after you, right? So what is the first step when somebody creates a business? What are the first things they should do? Should it be an LLC? Should it be an incorporated? What is the difference?
So that's a great question. And unfortunately, like a lot of things in the law, it's probably pretty specific as to what you're doing. But the reality is for the average like solopreneur, most people just start on their own in their own name. And then as they start to grow a little bit, they'll incorporate. And the reason for that is it really kind of starts with your taxes first. It's the way that you pay your taxes. You don't want to pay to file your personal income taxes, and then you'd also have to file a corporate return. So you're not making enough money up front in most of these situations. So people just say, I'm going to stay as myself for now, and then I'll grow. The real reason...
So that's a DBA first.
You'd be a DBA first.
What does that stand correct. For?
Doing business as.
Okay.
So most people just start as...
And it's like $25 at City
Hall.
Yeah,
exactly.
And
you
like
just
that.
Renew it every year. So right. So the purpose of the DBA is that it's on public record, like at City Hall, so that if somebody... If Jackie Zuckerman is doing business as Next on Scene, not incorporated, well, how am I supposed to know who Next on Scene is? Who's the backbone of it? Like, if you're a corporation, I can go on the Secretary of State's website and get your information, find out who your officers are, find out how to contact you, all that kind of stuff. But if you're just a DBA, you're like a ghost. So at least it backs back to City Hall. You can go and say, who's next on scene in that situation?
And you don't get like a tax ID, I remember. You don't get one until you get
correct.
An LLC.
Correct.
So it's basically like your social security number is the same for your DBA.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And then once you, if you fully incorporate. So, you know, the obviously, so it's kind of financial for most people first, but the second, you know, if not the most important question, the second most important question is, what are you doing in your business? And, you know, you want to incorporate because you want to protect yourself from liability if you end up getting sued down the road. So the idea of having a corporation is it's like it exists in like a bubble. So if anybody ever wanted to sue you, they could only go after whatever the corporation owned. Because what you don't want to have happen is something goes wrong in your business and then they come after you. They try to take all your assets of your business and then they try to come after your personal assets also. So the point of the corporation is if everything went wrong, at least it would be limited strictly to what the corporation owned, and what you own personally wouldn't be affected by that.
So that's an LLC and not an incorporated.
So you can have you can call them. There's regular corporations. There is what they call subchapter S corporations. There's LLCs, which is a limited liability company. They have LLPs, which is a limited liability partnership. They're all different kind of structures, and each one has its own benefit. It's really specific to what you're doing. The most standard one that people use, like especially for a solopreneur, is they'll be an LLC. So a limited liability company. So what that means is that you exist as a business for the purposes of having the protection. Okay, so take it as a real estate development. So I have clients who are real estate developers. Every time they buy a property, they put it in a separate LLC. So we live at 365 Broadway, so it would be 365 Broadway LLC. So the point of that is that, God forbid, if the house ever burned down or something happened, there was a slip and fall at the house or something like that, if you wanted to sue them, the most you could ever do is go after the LLC, and it only owns the one house. You don't want to own all your properties together in the same LLC because it's like a domino. If there's an issue with one house, then they can effectively go after all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important for the protection purpose. But an LLC is also good for you because you can do what they call a disregarded entity in the IRS.
What does that mean?
So what that means is if you were a regular corporation, okay, you have to file two tax returns. You have to file a tax return for yourself, and you have to file a tax return for your business. If you're an LLC, if you're an LLC and you're a disregarded entity, that means that the money literally comes into the LLC, but it actually comes into your pocket the same way. So you only have to file one tax return. So even if you have 100 LLCs, it still all comes onto your tax return. So it saves you money, and it's different about how they get paid out. It's just a really kind of specific on what your business is. But for most people, I would say it's a solopreneur. You're probably going to want to be an LLC. You're by yourself. You really just want the protection. So it's at a minimum, like in terms of cost, it's $500 to file it with the state. And then every year you need to renew it, and it's $500 a year going forward.
Interesting. Cool. So basically, what does that protect? An LLC.
So, say you were in the business of, I don't know, you were like makeup, okay? Mm-hmm. You work for Mary Kay or one of those companies, but you had your own though. And somebody, you know, you gave makeup to somebody and they had a really, really bad allergic reaction and they wanted to sue you. They had like a legitimate injury from it. So in that situation, if they sued you, they would only be able to come after whatever was owned by the business as long as you were in an LLC, and not come after your personal house or if you had anything else in the world, your cars or whatever the case may be. They would only be able to come after whatever the corporation owned.
So that's why it's better than having a DBA, because if something happened with the DBA, they could take everything you own because it's in your name.
Exactly.
Okay, cool stuff. Okay, now I kind of want to discuss more about, I don't know, what other, like, obviously you don't do as much trademark, but I think you can really hone in on the importance of trademarking and copywriting a little bit. Can you do that, even though it's not your main specialty?
Yeah, so, again, it's important to realize what you're doing. Not everything can have a trademark. Not everything is a patent, but if you're doing something that's unique, really, really unique, okay? Let's start with a patent first, okay? If you're doing something super unique, even if you don't have to be an inventor, people create, you know, little things that like these two things exist already, and I made the one thing that make them operate better together. You didn't really invent anything. It just could be like a piece of pipe, and now I connected them both, and now they both operate. Well, you want to be able to patent that, because somebody's just going to knock off your idea and then go make it themselves, and then they'll steal your business. So you would patent it in that situation. You would protect yourself, and then you'd have the right to either, you'd be the only person who could use it, or if anybody else wanted to use it, you would own it, and they basically would have to pay you for the right to use your patent, okay? So that's a pretty easy one. So definitely not everybody needs a patent for that. It's really for, like, you know, new products and stuff like that. Copyrights are, you know, pretty easy to figure out. Basically, if you created it on your own, chances are that you have the copyright to it. You know, if you're just sharing common information, that's different. But, you know, if you're really, like, putting together informational books or any of that kind of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, by right, or you're writing the magazine, or when you do your podcast, like, you own the copyrights for those. It's your intellectual property. You created it on your own. The most common one that most solos are probably going to use is a trademark. Okay, so just like when you have a Next Unseen, the trademark is just so somebody can't go open up a Next Unseen podcast, becoming Next Unseen. Also becoming Next Unseen. Something that's so similar that it creates brand confusion. So you by right, meaning like no matter what you do, right? If you create a business and it's whatever the name is, like don't use your name, but you created a candle company and it's like Mr. Wax, okay? Well, Mr. Wax Candles, you actually own the trademark to that. You created it. But it doesn't mean that you necessarily would be protected if somebody went to knock you off down the road. So what you would do is be able to get the trademark, and then you would own Mr. Wax in everything related to candles, and then you could spread it out more and more if your business grew. There's always an argument. So like Coca-Cola is not trademarked. It's never been trademarked because Coca-Cola is so well known that if you knock off Coca-Cola, everybody knows who the real Coca-Cola is. So
I never knew that.
They don't need to be trademarked, because it's just it's I'm sure if you look around, there's like any of these really big brands that you know, they may not even be trademarked because they're so big and they're so historically known that you couldn't knock them off. Like when you say Hershey, right? And we're not talking to our dog, but when you when I tell you I'm going to get a Hershey bar, you know exactly what I'm talking about, mm-hmm. right? You've been around it for your whole life. So if somebody comes down the street and says, "Oh, I created this new thing called a Hershey bar," you're gonna laugh at them and say, "Yeah, no." Right. Like, you know what I'm saying? So they're so well known. But for the smaller business, it's really important. Like once you've locked in on what you want to do, and you know what your name is and what your branding is and all that kind of stuff, you really want to look around and say, do I want to trademark this? Because it's like what happened to you. You know, you had Get Seen magazine. Then there was a very similar name of a magazine who sent you a threatening email. And we looked at it. And it, at the time, this is what we talked about before, they didn't have a trademark for the name of that business. But they wanted to argue that because they existed first, then they technically owned that trademark. But we looked into it. And we looked into it ourselves, and we felt like you were protected because the name of that magazine was very basic. It was very common. And we looked around the country, and there was multiple other versions of it all throughout the country that were unaffiliated. So you can't argue that you're knocking off the trademark when there's 25 different people openly doing it out there in the world, and you don't even own the mark either. So, but we made a decision with you at the time. You know, what you wanted to do was, he said, my business is going to grow, and what I don't want to do is grow, and then I have to change my name, and then I have to reteach the market about who I am. So we talked to a trademark lawyer. He gave us some suggestions about what things you could, you know, what you could change the name of the business to protect yourself, and we landed on Next on Scene as a result.
And you came up with it at Border Cafe.
I did. I do my best thinking at Border Cafe.
Andrew needs to be in advertising. That's all I got to say.
But, you know, so that's it. So if you're opening a business and you got your brand and you really want to push, well, you may want to look around and say, should I trademark this? Just because you want to know that it's yours, you've worked hard for it, and you want to be able to keep it.
So, Andrew, what are the standard contracts a business owner should have?
It's a good question. So obviously, I mean, I feel like this is my answer every time, but it's specific based on what your business is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the reality is, even if we don't get into the specific of what contract you need, I think just the concept of contracts is something that's very important for, you know, particularly small businesses to wrap their heads around. You know, a lot of people, and I'm guilty of this myself a lot of times, you know, I like a handshake. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And I, you know, people almost feel insulted sometimes when you ask them to sign contracts, because they're like, "Oh, you don't trust me." But, you know, the reality is we're running businesses, right? It, you know, you're going to go do work for somebody on the agreement that you're going to get paid, or you're going to do something else for them. What is the harm in you executing a contract that both of you say, I promise that this is what I'm going to do, you do the work correctly, and then you both walk away? You know, it's particularly the first time that you work with people. And once you have an existing relationship with people, I mean, should you continue to use contracts? Yes, I'm always going to tell you that you should. But you can, you know, you move away from it once you have it like a, you know, a normal course of business with people. But the first go around, you got to be locking everything up, because it's very important. First of all, you need to be determining, like, what am I expected to do as part of this contract? So I remember when I was in college, I got a landscaping job one summer. And some guy paid me like $500. The deal was he was going to give me $500. It was going to be 2 days. And I was going to clean out, like, I was going to mulch all the beds in his backyard or whatever. So I got there. I did it. And then I agreed, okay, he was like, hey, can you just do this for me? Can you just do that for me? And I was like, yeah, I guess. It wasn't a big deal. Well, all of a sudden, over the course of 2 days, it wasn't what I signed up for anymore. I had done way more work than the guy had originally asked me to do, and I was way undervalued for what I did. So, you know, that's a prime example. That happens to people all the time. You get uncomfortable when you're dealing with people, particularly the people that you're close with and you know, like, through other avenues in your life. You get uncomfortable when you're trying to do something for them and, you know, they're either not cooperating with you or they're telling you that you're not doing enough. The importance of the contract in that situation, just like in my example, was if I had a contract with that guy, I would have said, no, I'm not doing anything else. You told me $500 to do this specific part of the job. If you want me to do more, then you owe me more money for what you expect me to do. You know, and that's, people get, they don't have a contract and then they just get uncomfortable because clients get pushy sometimes and they're really unsatisfied. Like I think about, you know, you tell, I'm going to invite this many people to your party. Right. Or whatever. You're planning a party and this is how many people I tell you that I'm going to bring there. I'm going to bring 25. Right. And then the client gets angry on the night of event that there wasn't 50 people there. You told the client the whole time that you were going to bring 25 people. And if that had been in the contract, you would have just been able to show it to the client, say, I'm sorry that you're not happy with the number of people are here, but I completely fulfilled what I told you I was going to fulfill. And I deserve to be paid my full rate as a result.
Can we just bring up something similar to what you're talking about? So the other night on Million Dollar Listing New York, Frederick was in a deal closing, potentially selling this guy's like multi mansion in New York somewhere, right? So he basically like couldn't find a buyer. He did all these different things, and all of a sudden he had a meeting with the owner of that build or apartment condo, whatever it was. And he said, okay, I found a buyer that wants to buy at full asking. And Frederick comes back and goes, great, you know, you're still going to give me commission. Like, it's all good. I did everything I said I was going to do. And then the owner came back to him and said, well, you know, if you read the contract, you should go back and review the contract because I don't have to give you commission. I put an amendment in there that says if I sell it on my own, I don't have to pay out commission.
Exactly.
So, like, that basically is a prime example.
See, what I took away from that, too, was when they were going back and forth, Frederick said, I don't put that in my contracts. Because with these real estate brokers, these guys, what they don't see is, oh, like they're making a ton of commissions. But when they're really doing like these big developer projects, they're spending like $75,000 to $100,000 in marketing sometimes. They're marketing all over the world. Like they invest a lot of money. And he lost, forget the commission, he lost all the marketing money that he had spent as a result. Mm-hmm. Because he didn't read the contract careful enough. He knew already that he didn't like that language and he didn't agree to it and he didn't read the contract close enough, and then he got screwed as a result. Whereas if he had just read it, he would have known that was in there and he would have taken it out.
But the point of that also is like if you have a say in what you want to go forward and what you don't.
Right.
But you protect it by putting it in a contract.
Exactly. So yeah. I mean, I think wrapping your head around contracts for people gets kind of difficult sometimes, but I found that, you know, kind of really no matter what your business is, right? If servicing clients in any way, you can put together some sort of simple contract that just covers all of the basic, most basic protections. Because what happens is, you know, it's never the deals that everything goes smoothly that you need the contract for. It's when things go wrong, and then, you know, your first resource for your first resource when you don't have a contract is what? You say, what can I even do here? Everything was a handshake. Do I even have the right to collect any of this money at all, or seek, you know, have somebody come out and I got to pay somebody else to do this now? Am I going to get compensated for any of that? Like, all that stuff would have been addressed if you had just had a simple contract. And, you know, one or two pages, it doesn't need to be, you know, people get afraid of it sometimes. You do a couple simple pages, it covers all the standard provisions for you, and then all really you have to fill in is whatever the client's name is and whatever the amount of money is and whatever you're specifically going to be doing in that one deal. And you get as specific as you need to. But other than that, you don't have to really create a brand new contract every single time. It's very, very simple. It may be the only contract that you ever use. Ever. You may never need to do one again. It might be completely perfect for like a couple hundred dollars. It will save you forever. Because then as soon as things go wrong, at least you're familiar with, I have this contract. I know what it says. I know what I need to do when things go wrong. And if there's a disagreement, you can point right to it and say, I never told you I was going to do that. I never said I was going to take less money. This was the deal. This is what I was going to do. This is what you were going to pay me for it.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. Contract speaks for itself.
It totally does. So as a solopreneur, because I feel like most of the people that are in my realm are at least started as solopreneurs. So what other advice would you say that they need in being a business owner?
Wow. Well,
or thinking of starting a business.
I think that it's definitely important to make sure whatever you're doing is legal, right? Not talking about like you're running an illegal business. But, you know, do you need any kind of license to be allowed to do what you're doing? Like, for instance, like a DBA. Nobody ever continues their, like, pay. You're supposed to pay for your DBA every year to renew it at City Hall, and nobody ever does. So you're operating as a business. Do you even have the right to do business as somebody else? You haven't even filed that simple certificate.
So I have a question, though, because I remember I filed my LLC, and then I got a letter about my DBA, and I was like, but I filed an LLC. Like, do you need both?
No.
Okay. So once you file one, you don't need...
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. You don't want to do both, because what it does is it could potentially confuse somebody, and they would have the argument to say, I want to, you know, Next on Scene did me dirty, and I want to go after them. I want to go after Next on Scene, the LLC, and I want to go after Jackie individually because she holds herself out to the community as she does business as Next on Scene, and she's the corporation. So you don't, once you've created a corporation or some sort of corporate entity for your business, you don't need to continue the DBA anymore, and it's actually you don't want to continue the DBA.
Got it. Next on Scene didn't do you dirty, by the way.
Right.
So I'm just saying.
No, pretty good to me.
Yeah.
So, again, you know, it's important to know, are you allowed to do what you want to do there? Do you need any permission from the city or town? It could be a very simple one form, right? But do you need to do it? Do you have the right to do it where you are? There's zoning laws and stuff in every city and town that dictate what you can or can't do on certain properties. Are you allowed to do what you want to do there? Because how much money are you going to invest into this piece of property where you're going to have your business and to just have the city come in one day and just say, you're not allowed to do that here, move everything out? How much money do you have to invest before you figure that out? Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's important to think about what you're doing, okay? What are you doing? Do you need, any kind of extra protection because you're doing something so special? So that's your patent, your copyright, your trademark. Then, am I going to get sued, right? Nobody ever thinks they're going to get sued, but it happens from time to time, and things go wrong from time to time. So you want your whole life to crumble. So you need to say, do I need any kind of corporate protection? Then ask, am I allowed to do what I intend to do, where I intend to do it?
And what about for a nonprofit?
Nonprofits basically work the same.
They do.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same considerations. And the only difference is that, you know, they get tax relief. But, you know, sometimes they may get more flexibility, or, you know, it's not going to be more restrictive for a nonprofit, but they have to make the same considerations because, you know, how's it going to be organized? Who's going to run it? You know, it's more than just, what happens if we get sued. Setting up a corporation creates a board of directors. It creates like law and order in the business, and it creates an accountability trail. So there's a lot of things that go into it. So nonprofit has the same considerations, even though they just don't have the tax burden.
So like real estate, does a business transaction have to be written to be valid?
Well, writing's always the way to go,
mm-hmm.
without a doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because people forget when it, you know, what people forget the facts when they become inconvenient to them later on down the road. Having everything in writing is always the way to go, particularly if you're doing, you know, any kind of sales, 100%. Even in your own life, you want to make sure if you paid for something, you want to make sure that they wrote down and gave you the credit. You don't want them to come back around and say, oh, we didn't pay them, you know, and then they're coming after you.
And I just realized that real estate contracts don't always have to be written to be valid.
Yeah, I mean,
to be acknowledged.
You and I can have a deal, and we can have a handshake deal, and everything went completely fine. Right.
But what happens when it doesn't?
Exactly.
Right. So the written part is, but that's why it's better.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for the insight. We didn't play game time. I want to ask you 5 fun questions.
Okay.
What is Andrew DeLore's favorite food?
Wow. Pizza.
What kind of pizza?
Buffalo chicken pizza from Dockside.
That is so specific.
Or I don't know. My boy Spiro at Easy Pie is just kind of completely changing everything for me, too.
You didn't even talk briefly about how you're representing restaurants, too.
Yeah.
Don't you enjoy doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm doing a lot of licensing and zoning. And it's kind of difficult because when you do local stuff like that, like, I wouldn't even lie to anybody about it. Like, if you want to do something in, like, Worcester, for instance, like I can go do it for you and I can, you know, maybe get it done. But the chances are if you have anything that's a little bit of a gray area, whether you're going to be completed, like there's probably one lawyer in town that appears before those boards all the time, knows them, knows what they will and won't, you know, sign off on, knows how to present it to them the right way. Those like low level relationships when you're at like the local level are critically important when you're really trying to do, you know, big things to a place. So, you know, I like to do zoning and licensing particularly. Like I just licensed an axe throwing business. It's basically like darts with axes. I got them, I helped them get a liquor license, doing a lot of like restaurants and then zoning and real estate developments. Like it's really fun. It basically, I like it because it allows me to be more creative. And I really get to go like, and it's not as black and white as like arguing in a courtroom. I have a lot of like flexibility to be able to like emphasize things and like talk big picture about how things will be important to the neighborhoods that they happen in and stuff like that. And so I've definitely been busy with those, but I really do enjoy that part of the practice too.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really fun. I like watching from the outside. Okay, if you could wear one outfit for the rest of your life, what would it be and why?
One outfit for the rest of my life. Wow. What do you think of me?
It would be sweatpants. Your black Nike sweatpants. Are you currently wearing them right now?
Yep.
And a wife beater, probably. Or just being boxers. Just being comfortable.
I don't know. Probably sweatpants. And just like, just a t-shirt.
An Express 111 t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, if sweatpants and a t-shirt could be completely socially acceptable, it basically would be the
and
only
thing. You definitely thing need a hat because I feel like you always wear hats.
But I don't know, probably just like jeans and t-shirt if I have to, you know, go out and be grown up in the world. Just, I don't know, Express jeans and just a comfortable t-shirt.
Yeah, like a v-neck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I see. That's what I picture.
It's basically my whole wardrobe.
It is your whole wardrobe in multiple colors. Okay. What is your favorite TV guilty pleasure?
Wow, I love The Housewives.
You actually really like Bethany, though.
I love Bethany. She's
awesome.
Great.
Yeah.
She's great. What's my favorite TV? I love South Park.
South Park, yeah.
Yeah, South Park is definitely like my go-to. Like when I just want stupid humor
and ridiculousness.
I don't know. I don't know. South Park is definitely more like ridiculousness is always just like on now, so yeah, it's easy to like have on in the background. But if I went to go like seek something to watch, it would probably be South Park.
What's your favorite episode?
Wow. I don't know. Like, let me think about that. The Osmo Robot 3000. It's like Cartman. Cartman pretends to be a robot. So the Butters like Butters took a picture of him. He was like dancing with a Britney Spears doll in his backyard and like making out with it. And Butters took a picture of it and he was gonna show everybody at school. So Cartman pretended to be a robot. and like be like Butter's like friend. He was like his like robot friend, and so he was like following everywhere, and he couldn't take the robot mask off. It was so, oh my god, it was so funny. That one, that's probably, I think that's my brother's favorite episode too. But oh my god, that's hilarious. There's just so many. There's been so many episodes. I think I'd go with that one though.
So do you think they've lasted so long because they're always current? Like they're always current.
100%. Yeah. They like write it during the week. True. If it airs on Wednesday, like they like write it on Monday night. So it's always pretty current. They've been doing that. Like at the beginning, they were just kind of like it was all over the place. But since now, like in the last like 5 or 6 years, it's literally like it's on topic.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Okay, if you won $1 million tomorrow, what would be the first thing you would do?
Wow.
Wow is your word of the night, by the way.
All right, so here's what I would do, and this is my advice for anybody who wins big in the lottery. You're allowed to set up what they call a lottery trust, and the point is when you, in Massachusetts, if you win any more than $600, you have to go to a lottery office and claim it, which means that it's taxable, and it means that there's a report of it. So when you win $1 million, they like give you one of those big checks and they take the picture of you. And then everybody's like comes through like, hey, we went to third grade together and my cat is sick. Can you help me out? Like I borrow, you know what I'm saying? Everybody comes out of the woodwork looking for you. So you're allowed to set up a lottery trust. And what you do is you make me as the lawyer, the trustee of the trust, and I go cash the check for you. And I'm not allowed to disclose who the winner is. So it's a way to protect yourself. So the first thing I would do is set up a lottery trust for myself before I told anybody. Well, I'd probably tell you.
Okay, maybe. That's good. I hope you would tell maybe. Me.
But you set up a lottery trust. Like, it's going to be worth it because then it's going to be completely confidential who won it. And I think it's important for you to figure out, too, like, how are you going to owe in taxes? And you should pay the taxes up front. Because then you're not going to have the money later because you're going to blow
right. Do you recommend taking them like in increments or in lump sum?
Taking what?
But when you win big, you can win in you can take it in increments or you can take it in lump sum.
So, I mean, it's obviously completely up to the person. Yeah. But the reality is that in like 1950, if you won $10,000 a year for life, if like that was your payout, that would have been a ton of money, right? It's a lot of money now, but it's not the same. Mm-hmm. So what I would say is like you can't protect yourself against inflation, and like that value, that money is going to be worth less by the time you're done realizing the payout on it, and you might die and only get it for like 5 or 6 years, and then you know what I'm saying? Like you never even enjoyed the full benefit of it. What I would do is, you know, obviously it's up to the person, but personally, I would cash it out. I would take the lump sum because you get the most upfront, and you can figure out what do I need to pay off immediately, and then how do I invest the rest of this to turn this into way more money. Because if you invest it, if you won $500,000 and you're like, okay, I'm going to get paid out over the course of my lifetime, if you know what I'm saying, compared to I cashed it out and invested it and I made 10 times more money.
But you also could lose it too.
You could in theory, but you could all, you know, you could make safe investments. You could buy real estate with it. Real estate's the safest investment in the book. I think if you look back at it, really anybody who has any significant wealth in this country, you know, 99.9% of them are backed in real estate.
Good stuff, Andrew. Okay. And to close out, who is your celebrity crush?
Wow, right now?
Jennifer Aniston was it for a long
time. She
was.
She was, but she's gotten away from me a little bit.
Why? She still looks just as good.
I don't know. She's not moving the needle for me as much anymore. Who's my celebrity crush? I don't even know right now.
Like, changes every day.
Charlotte, what's that girl's name? Charlotte McKinney or whatever?
I don't think I know who that is.
Oh.
What is she in?
I don't know. She's in, like, movies. She's starting to be in movies and stuff. She was an Instagram model, but now she's actually, like, getting famous.
Charlotte McKinney? Yeah, I've never heard of her. I don't know. Cool stuff. I'll have to look her up.
I'm trying to look her up.
Oh, okay. Oh, she is really pretty. I can't remember what she was in, though.
I think she's, like, really just starting to, like, get movie and TV famous.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never heard of her. I mean, I guess I never put two and two together.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why she came to my mind. So I guess I'm going to go with her.
Okay, cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for all your amazing information. And everybody definitely needs to check out Andrew on social media, get social with him at Delory at Law and Delory Law on Facebook. And he's obviously more savvy on Instagram, thanks to my coaching. So Delory at Law is probably a better place to get him. And you can also reach out to him through email at andrew@delorylaw.com. So what is one key thing our audience can take away today from today's interview?
I guess the most important thing that I could tell you is that, you know, if you want to be, particularly for anybody who owns their own business, like, we're grown-ups and we're doing grown-up stuff every day. You can't just ignore the fact that people are going to try to screw you. People are going to try to come after you. You know, people might want to see you fail. You need to make sure that you've taken the basic precautions that we've kind of talked about today, just to make sure that you're in a good place. Like, weird things are going to happen, you know, but out of the gate, no matter what, like, make sure you're going to protect what you're doing. Make sure that you're going to protect yourself. Do you need to have your business incorporated or not? Make sure that you have a standard contract that lays out what you do so that you don't have to take the time to do a new contract every single time. And then when somebody goes to screw you, you know, you get paid. And then make sure you can do legally what you want to do where you want to do it. If you do all of those things, that's a great place to start. Everything else will just kind of come in time.
Isn't that the truth? Well, I hope you guys got some great takeaways. Becoming Next On Scene Episode 2 was a huge success. Thank you so much, Andrew, for coming on and being our amazing guest. Don't you want to learn how to become Next On Scene? Stay tuned for Episode 3. Becoming Next On Scene will be live every Monday morning for some live inspirations and great things. So if you haven't subscribed yet, do now.
The ups, the downs, and all the in-between. What it takes to become Next On Scene. Are you next? Follow us at Next On Scene.